Thank you for listening to this Podcast One Sportsnet production, available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the AP Top 25 College Football Podcast. I'm Ralph Russo, the college football writer with the Associated Press. This week, we preview the Big 12 with Max Olson from The Athletic. Oklahoma has a new transfer quarterback. How will Jalen Hurts fit into Lincoln Riley's offense? Texas enters the season with high hopes, and so does Iowa State. The conference has four new coaches, including Les Miles at Kansas, in one of the more unusual marriages of the offseason. Thanks for listening to the AP Top 25 College Football Podcast. You can find us at Podcast One and Apple Podcast and just about anywhere you get your podcast. Please subscribe, and if so inclined, give us a good review. And as usual, you can go to collegefootball.ap.org, where you can read all of AP's college football coverage. And away we go. We are previewing the Big 12 today here on the AP Top 25 College Football Podcast, and it has become a tradition. I bring in Max Olson from The Athletic to do so. Now, Max covers all of college football from coast to coast. He is a national writer for The Athletic, but he does a particularly good job with Big 12 stuff because he has lived in Big 12 country for quite some time. So that's why I like to bring on Max to talk a little Big 12. Thank you very much for joining me today, Max, and doing this again.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Thanks for having me on.
So it's kind of an interesting year in the Big 12 in that you have four new coaches. You still have Oklahoma as the favorite. Texas is back, so to speak. And we're kind of looking for who might be the other team to contend. So I think the popular question around the Big 12 these days has been, who's the third best team going into this season in the Big 12? If Oklahoma is the favorite and Texas is a challenger, you know, where is that other team? Because the Big 12 has made a reputation of being sort of like a very deep league. Teams pop up here and there. It seems like you get the middle class of the Big 12. Often, like, you get a challenger from in there. Who's the challenger this year that's going to come from the middle class of the Big 12?
It's a great question. I've been really pumping Iowa State throughout this offseason. I'm really a big believer, not just in Matt Campbell, but just kind of specifically where they're at in their process of building up that program. And it's not just because they have a returning quarterback, although I think they have a very promising one in Brock Purdy, who, you know, they threw into the fire in Big 12 play last season, and he really shined as a true freshman. But I really like where that program's at overall, where even with losing some veterans on defense, they've still got key guys at every level of that defense, some really good leadership. They lose an NFL running back in David Montgomery. They lose an NFL wide receiver in Nakeem Butler. How they replace the production of those guys, I think, is an interesting question mark. But, I like this Iowa State team if they can stay healthy. The fun thing, though, with this league this year is, you know, I had a really hard time sort of sorting the teams from 3 to 6 in the Big 12 because I think Baylor's close to where Iowa State's at. I think TCU and Oklahoma State are not far off either and are both trying to bounce back from disappointing seasons, I guess, by their standards and by their coach's experience. And, we're also trying to solve, unknowns at quarterback there. But I've always kind of felt like this Oklahoma State team and TCU were kind of the wild cards in the Big 12 when trying to sort of do the preseason standings. And, if you told me one of them was going to go out and win 9 games, I wouldn't be that shocked. And if you told me that a bunch of those teams end up just winning 6 or 7 games, I guess I wouldn't be that surprised either, because the Big 12 is, I think, for the most part, does have really good parity. And I feel like most weeks we see a lot of these games just come down to one score or one turnover or something crazy.
Let's lump some teams together here. And you did a good job of leading me to that already with Oklahoma State and TCU. Two teams with excellent coaches, Mike Gundy at Oklahoma State and Gary Patterson at TCU. And also a history of success that suggests that you should not underestimate the coaches or the programs. Maybe they have a hard time getting over the hump and knocking off Oklahoma to win the conference. But nonetheless, these are a couple of coaches and a couple of programs that often do their best work when they are a bit underestimated, especially TCU.
Yeah, there's no doubt that's the case for TCU. You know, we've seen their ability to bounce back. You know, when they went and had their first really bad season in the Big 12, they found Trevon Boykin and changed the offense and bounced back. And, you know, we're playing for Big 12 titles. And, you know, when they went 6-7 in 2016, you know, they bounced back in 2017 and went 11-3 and played in the Big 12 title game. It does feel similar in the sense that, you know, I think this TCU team was, it's funny, they had such a high profile early in the season when you play that game against Ohio State in Dallas and you watched them for 2-3 quarters feel like, wow, they've got real speed. Like they can kind of hang with Ohio State. This is pretty encouraging for where they at. And, you know, they just had so many injuries and really kind of fell apart down the stretch. Now they miraculously found a way to win enough games to get to a bowl and then played, you know, one of the best bad bowl games we've ever seen in the Cheez-It
Bowl. Yeah.
I liked how that team rallied back last year when they, you know, I looked to me like they weren't going to go bowling. And, you know, they've still got a ton of really good talented guys back on defense. And they've got, you know, one of the best playmakers in the Big 12 in Jalen Reagor. You know, you feel like they're okay on the offensive line. It's just the quarterback deal. And they don't have Matthew Baldwin, the Ohio State transfer. He's not going to be eligible. You know, you have Kansas State transfer Alex Delton, who has had a lot of ups and downs in his time with the Wildcats, and they felt like he brought some steadiness this spring. You know, it's they didn't have Mike Collins in the spring. It's really a really interesting wide open battle there at quarterback. And I feel like if you told me today who that quarterback's going to be for 12 games, I could probably tell you how TCU's going to do. But I just think that's going to be kind of fluid over the course of the season when you've got some solid older guys and you've got some kind of promising young guys that you don't know what they can do yet.
And Oklahoma State, again, a similar boat in that all of a sudden they're coming off of a little bit of a down year. In some ways, it's funny, I think there's a lot of buy-in on Patterson because he's established some of this bounce-back credibility. And they clearly had some issues at quarterback and a ton of injuries. So it was I feel like it's a little easier to predict a bounce-back from TCU. Where I think the bounce back, there seems to be a little more skepticism for Oklahoma State, whether they could have a big bounce back. There were some moments last year when Oklahoma State looked very much like Oklahoma State, but they were a weird team last year. You know, listen, a lot of that I think had to do with just turnover at key positions, especially quarterback.
Oh, yeah, definitely. They were a fascinating team last year because, you know, they beat Texas in Stillwater. They beat West Virginia, which you know, in a critical game in November at home. They were a play away from beating Oklahoma last year, but then they lose, you know, they lose to Texas Tech. They get blown out at home by Texas Tech. They, you know, they lose at Baylor. You know, they lose at TCU to end the regular season.
Yeah, lost at Kansas State, but beat Boise State. You know, really nice wins, but also some really puzzling performances, especially away from home.
Yeah, yeah, and that was a good Boise State team when they played them. So, you know, you saw the potential there. It was just kind of all over the place. And the interesting thing over the course of that shaky season is that Mike Gundy really refused to play the two quarterbacks that are now competing for the job now, Drew Brown and Spencer Sanders. He redshirted both of them and just rolled with Taylor Cornelius and rolled with the veteran and trusted him. And, you know, that makes their quarterback deal now, you know, a bit of a mystery. Drew Brown was a grad transfer from Hawaii that they were able to redshirt. Spencer Sanders is a really talented player out of the state of Texas who was a freshman last year, redshirted him. He was coming back from an injury. But, you know, it makes for, you know, that question mark there certainly is going to affect their upside and their ceiling quite a bit. But they've got a really, really good running back in Chuba Hubbard. They've got Tylan Wallace, who was one of the best wideouts in the country last year. You feel like they're in okay shape in terms of bringing back the offensive line. And then, you know, on defense with Jim Knowles, who they hired away from Duke last year, I think you saw flashes that they could be really good. They've got some good players in the secondary, especially. You've got some good pieces, I think, potentially at linebacker. But, you know, it's still kind of coming together for them on defense. But they're, you know, I know talking to other Big 12 coaches, they were impressed at times by what Jim Knowles was trying to do there. And I think give him another year of getting the hang of the Big 12. And, you know, they really, you know, if they figure out quarterback, they could definitely bounce back in a big way.
You mentioned figuring things out on defense. And the other team that's sort of in that group or this particular grouping, we'll throw Baylor in there. As you said, they seem to be, which would make sense because Matt Campbell has, a year head start on Matt Rhule. Baylor seems to be moving along in its progression as a program, somewhat similarly to the way Matt Campbell did at Iowa State. So they're in year three of a pretty massive rebuild, took a big step forward last year. A lot of times the next steps after that are even tougher. You take a big step forward and then you take sort of incremental steps in the building process. Baylor's defense was pretty bad last year. They made some great strides on offense, but for a coach, and Matt, I don't necessarily consider Matt Rhule a defensive coach, but when he's had good teams, when he had really good teams at Temple, they played some pretty scrappy defense, and they just haven't been able to figure out that side of the ball yet. Now, a lot of youth has a lot to explain of that, and maybe guys just get older, bigger, and stronger, and that cleans some of that up. Do you sense that's what they're banking on at Baylor this year?
Yeah, I think so. I remember talking with Matt Rhule in the middle of last season, and I think it was after they had just beat Kansas State, and he said, he was excited about, where they were headed, but just finding an identity on defense had just been such a struggle, and I think that's continued to be the case. They have good veteran pieces back on defense. They have James Lynch and Bravion Roy up front. You've got Blake Lynch, who's a really interesting piece as a kind of a linebacker nickel type. You got Clay Johnson, who was one of the Big 12 tackle leaders. I think he might have been the Big 12 tackle leader, but they got to get a lot better in the secondary, and you've got some experience there. So, I think they could, put together a lineup that has a bunch of juniors and seniors, and maybe there's, an opportunity there to be a lot better defensively. And, the big challenge for them through 2 years is just, when they got there, they were really in bad shape on the offensive and defensive lines, and just building and developing the depth there. You feel like they're finally kind of at a place where they, I think that's one of Matt Rhule's big takeaways in playing in the Big 12 is, it's not just about the speed and about the quarterback and stuff like that, but you really do have to be able to hang with these guys in the trenches. And Baylor really has had a hard time doing that. They've had times when they've had to play, converted tight ends on the offensive line and guys who were 270, 280 pounds. And I think they finally feel like they're at a point where that's solidified, where you've got guys that, are closer to 300 plus pounds, and you feel like there's some steadiness there. So you take that, you combine it with, a really good quarterback in Charlie Brewer. And I think enough weapons on offense to put up some points. That's how Baylor turned it around last season. They played a lot smarter. It's just a matter of kind of, can they play good enough defense to actually be, in Big 12 contention in November. And that's something that's eluded them so far. Going from one win to seven, obviously a very impressive step, and you love what Matt Rhule's done there. So yeah, you said it, jumping to 8-9 wins. I think that's going to be a much tougher step, and especially in a league that's this tight, but I feel like they're definitely heading in the right direction.
I also feel like one of the interesting storylines of the Big 12 this year is if Baylor continues to progress, if Iowa State, as a lot of people think, could take a small step forward and have another really good year. I mean, listen, for Iowa State, if you start stringing together 8-9 win seasons, that's pretty impressive. That doesn't happen very often at Iowa State. With Matt Rhule and Matt Campbell, those are guys who already drew not just other college interest, but NFL interest. Now, Matt Campbell took one route and he sort of passed, just said, no, thank you. I'm not even going to, take the interviews. Thank you for the interest. Matt Rhule, who has NFL in his background, took a little bit of a different route, and he took some of those interviews. I don't know how serious he was about any of those jobs, but I think he also looked at it and said, it's maybe in my benefit and my program's benefit to at least be upfront about it, but talk to some folks. But I think it'll be really interesting as these programs grow, what happens this year when those cycles come through, NFL possibilities, other college jobs open up, because these are two very highly thought of coaches at a couple of places that, again, they're not always easy to win. And like I said, I'm just interested to see how those things play out this year, because I think it'll be sort of the backdrop to the season if these teams have good seasons.
Yeah, it's true. And, it's funny. I get asked a lot, hey, is this going to be Matt Campbell's last season at Iowa State? Like, he's got to be moving on to bigger and better things. And, I tell you what, that's just not Matt Campbell. He's just a different cat. He's not motivated by money. He's not motivated by, being considered one of the you know, best and biggest coaches in the country. Like, he really loves what he has in Ames. I think he's very, very comfortable there. He saw Iowa State as a sleeping giant. And he, you know, he watched guys like Gary Patterson and Bill Snyder, Mike Gundy, and the way they turned their programs into really consistent contenders. And I think he admired that and wanted to do the same in Ames. And his name gets brought up for jobs, but you never see him going and interviewing for these jobs. He's you know, I think the actions have always matched up with the words that, yeah, he's turned it into extensions and more money for his staff and stuff like that. But, you know, I think Tennessee came after him multiple times, and he couldn't have had any less interest in that one when that was open. So, like, there's been a bunch of jobs like that that just don't appeal to him. And honestly, other than maybe jobs like Ohio State or Notre Dame, which I don't think are going to open up soon, I just have a hard time seeing what job could lure him away from Ames. He really loves it there that much and really believes, you know, that much in what they're doing. And then, you know, Matt Rhule, it's been a delicate dance for Matt Rhule because, you know, he's I think he's tried to be very upfront with his players and with his AD that, hey, if the NFL calls, you know, I'm going to take that call and listen and see what happens. And, you know, it happened first year with the Colts. Obviously, I think the Colts were not probably a tough PR spin to hire a 1-11 coach out of the college ranks. Last year, the Jets tried to hire him, but also tried to kind of do an arranged marriage thing where I believe Greg Williams would be his DC, and he was not very, you know, enthusiastic about being told who he had to hire for that. So
can I just interject here? I think it speaks well of Matt Campbell that he didn't want to be strapped with Greg Williams, but I'll just move on with that.
Oh, you said Matt Campbell then.
Oh, excuse me, Matt Rhule. It speaks well of Matt Rhule that he did not want to be strapped with Greg Williams.
I don't think
Williams.
Either of those guys is a good fit with Greg Williams.
Yeah. Anyway.
But Matt Rhule, you know, didn't want to go for that kind of deal. And look, I think that obviously that makes it tough because you've got players and recruits who are asking, hey, how long are you going to be here? Like, how committed are you to this thing? And I think he's tried to be upfront with them that, you know, those are huge opportunities that you at least got to kind of see what's out there. But, you know, I think as Baylor continues to have success, like, I just know Matt Rhule has so many folks in the NFL ranks who really respect him. And,
yeah.
You know, he did a little bit of time at that level. But I think as Baylor continues to succeed, it's going to continue to happen. There's going to continue to be more and more NFL teams that put him on their list that want to talk to him. And so kind of what's going to be the right job for him someday, or will he ultimately find maybe the grass is not greener and that he'd rather, you know, maybe stay put in with this long-term deal he has in Waco.
Yeah. The thing with Campbell, I think that could be interesting is if a job like, and it'll all go back to USC this year, every time we talk about coaching carousel, if a job like USC comes open, USC is in such a state of dysfunction, not just at the, okay, we maybe don't have the right coach. It becomes AD, president, what is going on in this school throughout the administration. That I have a hard time seeing a guy like Matt Campbell embrace, but you could also see if they were to do some things within the administration, bring in a real AD, if they could sell him on a vision of, wait a second, we're ready to do things very different here. And we want you, we like your vision, and we want your vision to be the person. But I got to tell you something else, though. Matt Campbell in L.A., it seems like an interesting fit, right?
You know, the thing is, like, this is, you know, I just don't think he wants that drama, whether it's right. USC or Auburn or any of these programs that may be opening up. Like, I don't think he probably finds that very appealing. This is a guy who's lived in Ohio pretty much his entire life. I think his life's ambition was to be the head coach of Mount Union. So
yeah,
I think the preference is to stay in the Midwest where you're comfortable. And yeah, Matt Campbell in LA, that would be a pretty wild experiment. But I think just with the way he operates, that would be, that would be pretty stunning if that was what he felt like was the next step. But hey, you know what? This comes with success. You know, I think he's a name that I think has impressed everybody just in the way he operates, the way he builds. And I think Iowa State fans are going to have to continue to deal with his name being brought up for these things. But boy, I think it'd take something really special for him to leave.
I actually think he would do a fabulous job at USC. But again, I think because USC really needs quite frankly, I think Clay Helton's is a lot like Matt Campbell, but I think Matt Campbell's just sort of better at the job. Like, I think they hired Clay Helton to a certain degree because they wanted just a good dude and a good, you know, a sort of a solid football lifer who would bring a different, a little less drama and a different sort of mindset to that job and a little less glitz. To be honest, that's exactly what Matt Campbell is. That's one of the reasons why they hired Clay Helton. I don't want to ruin Iowa State's fans' day by continually talking about where their coach is going to be heading. I think you're right. I don't think it's a natural fit. But boy, I think if a clear-eyed AD, you know, who came in there and sort of cleaned up the athletic program, put things on the right path and said, Matt, come here, do your thing, and we're just going to be a good old-fashioned football program now and try to shield ourselves off from the drama, I think it'd be a great, great fit out there. Now,
let me just throw a crazy one at you here, and I'm not trying to make any fans mad, but like, what if it's more of a musical chairs thing where what if like a James Franklin gets USC and then Penn State looks at a guy like Matt Campbell and says, this guy really fits our type of community.
Yeah, that would also work really well too. That's the scenario that seems to make a lot of sense to me. Again, cultural fit and a guy who in James Franklin who might be interested in the challenge of what the big spotlight at USC would provide. So we're gonna
so sorry, Iowa State fans. I should take that back. I don't want you guys yelling at me.
Yeah. And I love the fact that he's there at Iowa State and doing really well. And it really, you know, I'm really inclined to pick Iowa State to do very big things this year because I am all in on Matt Campbell and have been for quite some time. So I'm going to take a quick break and we're going to talk about another coach who the NFL sort of has its eye on and how his team is going to do this season at the very top of the Big 12. I'm talking with Max Olson from The Athletic and we'll be back right after this. And we're back on the AP Top 25 College Football Podcast, Big 12 Preview Edition. Max Olson from The Athletic. He's a national college football writer with a keen interest and a lot of information on the Big 12. So I like to bring Max in to talk Big 12. So, yeah, we talked about Matt Campbell and Matt Rhule and their NFL interests. Well, at the very top of the Big 12, Oklahoma has created a monster. They've won the Big 12 is three straight years now, right? If I remember correctly,
I believe
they're on four now.
Wait, shoot, it's four, isn't it?
You know what they are? They're on, I think, four straight now, Big 12 titles, because one of the years when they didn't make the playoff, they also won the Big 12.
That's right.
Lincoln Riley, his first two seasons there, have produced two Heisman Trophy winners, and he, of course, is a handsome coach with a really good offensive background. So, of course, that's the flavor of the week, flavor of the day in the NFL. I was almost a little surprised that you didn't have a little more interest in Lincoln Riley from the NFL last year, though to a certain degree, Joe Castiglione and Oklahoma cut that off at the pass by locking him up early on. But again, like you know, he is now the blueprint of what NFL coaches want. We'll see how long that lasts. I mean, that's why Cliff Kingsbury landed in the NFL. What can Lincoln Riley do this year with Jalen Hurts? I think that's the $64,000 question in Soonerland. We expect another big year out of the Oklahoma quarterback because we always get big years out of the Oklahoma quarterback. But will it look a little different this year with Jalen Hurts?
Yes and no. I think that the challenge for Jalen Hurts is we got to keep in mind this is his fourth offensive coordinator in 4 years. You know, we saw what he did with Lane Kiffin. It was very promising. Then he goes to Brian Daboll. Then he goes to working with Dan Enos and Mike Locksley last year. And now he moves on to, you know, the best offense in the country. And hey, Jalen, can you please conform a little bit to what we're doing? But at the same time, Oklahoma, I think, can adjust a little bit around his talents and, you know, kind of add more of that power run game that he can bring and stuff like that. Look, they've got a lot of great pieces around them. CeeDee Lamb is phenomenal. They've got a deep collection of backs that are all very efficient. Grant Calcaterra is one of the best tight ends in the country. You know, they're replacing a bunch of guys on the offensive line. Creed Humphrey's really good at center, but they're kind of replacing everybody else. So kind of how that comes together is certainly a factor. But, you know, again, they've got one of the best O-line coaches in the country in Bill Beanbow. So you sort of assume all that stuff's going to come together. The thing that you got to ask is kind of what is Jalen Hurts' ceiling? And I think we saw last season in very limited playing time and a lot of it mop-up time that he was, you know, he played his most efficient season yet as a passer. So I think, you know, he kind of has – I think quietly made a lot of progress there, you know, in backing up Tua. But what does that look like? Can he kind of make the reads and all the throws that Baker and Kyler did? You know, I think you saw in the spring game as a work in progress. And look, Lincoln Riley will tell you it's not over yet. They love Tanner Mordecai. He's a guy who's been in the program a couple of years, knows the offense, learned from Baker, and and it kind of has that kind of scrappy underdog kind of mentality. And then they brought in one of the best quarterbacks in the country in Spencer Rattler. So, that you know, Lincoln Riley would tell you the competition's not over.
Well, I'm
sure it'll still be Jalen Hurts.
Yeah,
there's no doubt about that.
Lincoln also played this last year with Kyler and Austin Kendall. So.
Oh, sure. He said it was the closest battle ever. So
right.
I imagine he'll probably say the same now, but he gets mad if anyone says that this is decided that Jalen's a starter. But yeah, I think Jalen Hurts, I think he's going to be great in this offense. I think they're going to find ways to adjust to what he does. And I think he's just got so much talent around him that he's really set up to succeed as long as he's healthy.
So on the other side of the ball, that's been where the Sooners have had their issues, and they swiped Alex Grinch, a very promising defensive coordinator, away from Ohio State. Grinch really made his name at Washington State with Mike Leach, doing a lot with kind of spare parts. So Washington State does not recruit a lot of elite defensive talent, but they always manage to sort of piece things together defensively. But there has been a sense at Oklahoma, correct me if I'm wrong here, I think there's been a sense at Oklahoma that it's not just how we're lining these guys up. They've been picking bad defensive players. They have not recruited mm-hmm. well on that side of the ball. So I would ask you, how much impact do you think Grinch can have this year if really the core problem at Oklahoma has been poor acquisition of talent?
It's funny. Lincoln Riley has said from, you know, the time he was handed the keys as the head coach there, you know, he said for a while that he, you know, they don't have the depth on defense, especially up front, that they should have, that they do have on offense. And so, yeah, the recruiting piece is a big part of it. And I think that's important to keep that perspective because, you know, Alex Grinch just got there. I mean, they're doing a nice job in the 2020 class, but it's going to take several years to get those guys in the program and caught up and taught up and everything. So you are trying to turn it around on that front, but you're trying to make as much progress as you can with this group. And you know, it's funny because it's like, what's the bar, right? Like where do they need to get to on defense to be, you know, the best team in the country? The past couple of years, you know, when you have one of the worst defenses in the country, it's like if you could have had like the 50th or 40th best defense in the country, you probably win a national title or multiple national titles. So I don't think like where Oklahoma is at offensively, like they don't have to have a top 25 defense under Alex Grinch this season at all to be, you know, in the playoff to win another Big 12 title, five in a row. But they've got to make progress and they've got to instill a lot more confidence. And I think in being around some of their players at media days, like they're saying all the right things, but that's a group that just really fell apart over the course of the season, you know, lost their DC in the middle of the season. You need to inject a lot more confidence there. I like how Grinch has gone about it in really emphasizing forcing more turnovers and kind of trying to change the mentality around there. And I think that was one of the best hires in the country and one that we probably didn't talk about enough this offseason. But, you know, you don't have to take them that far to win another Big 12 title. But, you know, if Oklahoma wants to be in the national title hunt, like it's going to take big, big progress and staying healthy on defense, because I agree. I just don't think they have the depth that these teams like, you know, Alabama and Clemson and Georgia do on that side of the ball. There's no question.
Okay, so Texas is back. We've established Texas is back, and I kid around, but I think we've even had this conversation on this podcast, but we say that tongue in cheek, but I think what Texas is back means now is I'm fairly confident Texas is good again. I think they're going to be good this year. Whether they are going to reach the ceiling of the program, whether they're going to take another big step forward after a nice step forward next year, I question a little bit of that. I think this could be a year where they're still relying on a lot of young players, freshman, sophomore, from these really good recruiting classes to be big producers automatically. In other words, the most talented players on the team are the underclassmen, and they're still sort of cycling through the upperclassmen who have sort of bought in and been bridges, but I don't know how much you're going to be able to expect as far as, again, like taking a 10-win team and making it an 11-win team. So what I've been sort of saying, my line on Texas this offseason has been, I think they'll be just about as good as they were last year. I think they could it could be another positive step forward in development, but I don't know if the record's going to be much better this year.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. I think that it's interesting when you start to see people, you know, give Texas like a top five ranking or put them in their playoff projections and stuff like that. I kind of feel like I'm inclined to say Texas is more of a year away from us going into a season saying, wow, Texas is has all the makings of a playoff team. I just don't think this is that year. I could be wrong, but you know, it's going to take, like, I really like what they have on defense. It's just none of those guys are proven. Like, you've got you're leaning on a ton of true sophomores. You've got three true sophomores in Anthony Cook, Jalen Green, and DeSean Jameson at cornerback. And then the Big 12, it's not a fun league to have young corners. You're leaning on guys like Idelia Doye at linebacker and Joseph Osai, who have heard nothing but good things about. You've got a redshirt freshman at nose tackle. I mean, you've got, you know, Caden Stearns and B.J. Foster showed you a lot last year, but they were true freshmen. So to me, it's really up to those guys. And if they make a real leap this offseason and, you know, through August and into this opener here, if they make a massive leap forward, and I think that's possible with how good their strength conditioning program is and how good Todd Orlando is, if they really make a jump, then this team is going to be really, really dangerous. And the more likely, I think they're going to have ups and downs. And you know, I think offensive line, another key problem there where you're replacing a couple starters. And then you got to keep Sam healthy. They don't have really a proven backup who's played at all. So, you know, there's certainly, I think, some question marks there. But I like the way you framed it. And I kind of put it this way. I think last season, I think Tom Herman said kind of consistently, he felt like that team sort of overachieved. You know, they really didn't blow anybody out last year.
Yeah, they had a strange season. If you look at some of the teams that on the lesser teams on the schedule, they had some close wins, but some of the better teams, or at least more talented teams on the schedule, they really rose to the occasion and had some great wins.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, but there are games like Baylor and Kansas State and Kansas where they're playing a lot closer than they probably should have. So, you know, even Tulsa last year. So, you know, I think that in some ways I think this could be a 10-win team that feels like a way more legitimate 10-win team than maybe last year's one did that scrapped out a lot of close games that could have lost a bunch more than they did. I don't know that you're going to call this group a group of overachievers. I think the upside is very exciting for them. It's just can they kind of hold it all together and find a way to get to nine or 10 wins, get back to the Big 12 title game, you know, find a way to beat Oklahoma once or twice. I just think the things they're leaning on are just not proven. And I think a year from now, especially with Ellinger as a senior, you feel like you're feeling really good about how it's all kind of set up for next year. But this year, can you kind of take that big jump of proving that, you know, you're going to be an annual contender?
Yeah, I would say this. In today's college football, the elite programs get a lot of production out of redshirt freshmen and sophomore because they're recruiting elite players. And that's what Texas has been diving into that pool over the last couple of years. So it's not completely uncommon to see teams that take big step forwards with younger teams. I would say, like, Ohio State, I think, when they won in 2014, was a good example of a team that sort of arrived a year early. If you looked up, the stars on that team, Zeke and Bosa, a lot of them were sophomores, but they just all were so talented and they clicked. And essentially, that's what Tom Herman is trying to build, right? He's recruiting those type of athletes and trying to build that type of program. So it wouldn't be totally out of the realm of possibility that all of a sudden this sophomore redshirt freshman heavy team with a lot of talented kids in that class do take a massive step forward, because I think you see that in college football at the elite level. But again, I'm just going to take a more conservative approach.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I think there's a couple of things that are important. They do have great player leadership. I think Ellinger and Colin Johnson and Brandon Jones, some of the guys they've come back, like, I think that's not a question mark for this group. And I think they see the potential for this offense to just have a lot more firepower and score a lot more points this year. Even with losing Brew McCoy, like, you feel like you've got Keontae Ingram, the sophomore running back, who they feel like is ready to take off. Jordan Whittington, a true freshman who's an incredible athlete offensively. You've got a lot of depth at wide receiver. Okay at tight end, but you've got a lot of depth, not just with Colin Johnson, but with Devin Duvernay and Jake Smith and Brennan Eagles and some of these younger guys that you're plugging into the lineup there. They feel like they have a chance to go out and be really, really dangerous on offense if they can keep guys healthy and they can get, you know, some steady play from the offensive line. So this could be, you know, they have the makings to be a really fun team, and one that sort of, you know, I think that LSU game early in the season is sort of that massive test of where they at.
Okay, so, and by the way, I had to giggle a little bit when you said the loss of Brew McCoy. Like, was he there? What, did that even happen? Was that a dream sequence?
He came and went, and it's hey man, that's life in the portal world, you know.
All right, there are four Big 12 schools with new coaches. Texas Tech has Matt Wells in year one. West Virginia has Neil Brown in year one. Chris Kleiman, I keep saying Kleiman, which is wrong. Chris Kleiman is now the new coach at Kansas State, taking over for Bill Snyder, the legend and the icon there. And Les Miles is the coach of Kansas, which is probably maybe more interesting than it is important. But you got those four new coaches, Max Olson. I want you to tell me which of the four is best positioned to have a good season this year. Which of the four would you buy long term, and which of the four do you think has the toughest job? And that's probably.
Do we need to ask it? I mean,
I guess only because of, you know, maybe expectation level. You could make the argument that if Les just gets to bowl games in the next couple of years, that would be, you know, a great job. But give me the one who's best set up to have a good season this year.
Yeah, I think that's Texas Tech. I like Matt Wells. I think he brought together a good staff that is going to fit Lubbock quite well. That's a team that I think when you look at the way the Big 12 shook out last year, when you see Oklahoma State and TCU down a little bit last year, Texas Tech should have stepped up, and they should have won 7-8 games. And once again, just sort of kind of struggled to avoid mediocrity, had a lot of injuries at quarterback, kind of a crazy amount of injuries with all three of them getting hurt. But I think Texas Tech should have been better than they were last year. And I think they bring enough back with this team that you feel like, to me, it's pretty clear that Texas Tech is in the best shape of those. But I think they're still probably kind of a bowl bubble team, right? They're probably, you know, going into November needing to win a couple games to get to 6 or 7. So, you know, that's kind of where they've been for years, and they need to break out of that funk. And I really like Alan Bowman. You know, he's healthy after going through all the crazy injuries he went through last year. I think for a true sophomore, a great leader for that program. You've got some pieces, a good offensive line, you know, one of the most experienced offensive lines in the country. I like some of the guys they've got back on defense, and they've done a really nice job of adding grad transfers in some key spots to try and get better right away. So I think the fact that their defense is not straying too far from where they've been. Their offense under David Yost is really fits nicely in the Big 12, and is, I don't think, a big dramatic leap from what they were doing under Cliff Kingsbury. I think that makes for a smoother transition, and I think it's a team that's you know, got enough leadership back that you feel like they have a chance to win 6 or 7 if things go right. Let's see. What was your next one?
Well, the other one was, let's go with which one do you think you would buy?
The long-term buy?
Yeah, long-term buy.
Okay. I love Neil Brown. I think that at West Virginia, it's going to take time. You know, Dana Holgorsen kind of left at the right time, where they just graduated all of their player leadership on both sides of the ball with, you know, Will Greer and David Sills and David Long and all those guys that moved on. So they're from an experience standpoint, they're really kind of starting from scratch at West Virginia. And so this year, I think it's going to be, it's going to take a lot of things bouncing right, I think, for them to get to 6 wins. But I think long-term he's going to be a great fit in Morgantown. I like the staff he's put together there. And I think that clearly West Virginia fans are really happy with him. I think it's going to require some patience. And I think that's probably true for Kansas State too, where, you know, to me, like, I don't really get hung up on the FCS to FBS jump. I think Chris Kleiman has a championship blueprint clearly that he developed at North Dakota State, and it's one that fits Manhattan, Kansas. It's one that fits not only their historical kind of style of play under Bill Snyder, but also just recruiting in that region. So I am optimistic about you know, what he and his staff can do there. It's going to take some. You know, they say the cupboard's not bare there, but I think it is going to take some recruiting to kind of get where they want to get, and they've done a really solid job so far. You know, it's I think it's a team that's got a bunch of question marks, but it's got some high end players, and I think does have a chance to get to six if some things bounce the right way. So I really like those two for the long term. I think those were the right hires. Might not see it this year.
Let me frame something this way with Kansas and Kansas State, because Kansas State, again, maybe not a rebuild from scratch, but nonetheless in a position of transition. Now, you could say in some ways they are more stable now, even with a new coach cycling in, simply because there was that specter hanging over the program of how long is Bill Snyder going to be here. He is a wonderful coach and a Hall of Famer, but at some point this is probably going to end, and that maybe was whittling away at the program a little bit. So I would ask you this. Does Kansas State being in flux help Kansas? Does that give Kansas an opportunity to maybe make a little more ground up because Kansas State is trying to find its way under new leadership?
Yeah, you know, I think that's a fair observation. I think that
you don't sound too convinced, though.
Well, no, I think that Kansas State didn't hire Ron Prince here. You know what I mean? I think they hired a pretty proven, competent guy who I think is not daunted by the challenge of Kansas State, and I think it probably helped everybody in Manhattan that they were able to pull off a relatively clean break. You have to give Gene Taylor a lot of credit for avoiding kind of the disaster that everyone was sort of anticipating. When to have a losing season like they did, they were able to make this transition go, I think, probably a lot smoother than most people expected. And there is going to be a little bit of rebuilding time here for Kansas State as they get the hang of this league and as they restock the roster a little bit. And I think that does provide an opportunity for Kansas. And I think that where Kansas needs to strike is certainly in recruiting and the fact that kids know Les Miles. They know he's won a national championship. He's obviously a character, and I think they've shown so far that in building a much stronger support staff around him than David Beatty have with a much deeper roster of recruiting staffers. I think they understand that the talent part is a huge problem, that there's a huge debt there from a scholarship standpoint, and they've got to fix that as quickly as possible. So I like what they've done from a recruiting standpoint of, you just got to get, you've got to get Big 12 caliber players at Kansas. They don't have a ton. And I guess the hope there is that Les Miles can breed some excitement and enthusiasm to kids coming to Kansas.
I wonder if you talk about how what they've done around him as far as support staff, and we always a term that gets thrown around, the CEO coach, and the coach is sort of the front face of the organization to a certain degree, but so much of what his effectiveness, it comes with how he delegates and who he hires and his staff. And I do wonder if at Kansas that was really is the model. You know, Les becomes the guy who sort of gets boosters excited and is a deal closer in recruiting. But ultimately, what will be the success, if Kansas has success, is what they have around Les as far as infrastructure that has been lacking. And Les's job, first and foremost, is to build some enthusiasm and to get some donors to write checks.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And they, they raised a lot of money for a stadium renovation. And when Jeff Long got there, he figured out, wait, we need to be putting this money towards actually building up our football staff and actually giving our new coach as much support as possible in turning this thing around, because they have challenges from a numbers standpoint that nobody in the Big 12 and really nobody at the Power 5 level is dealing with. And so I applaud them on that, for understanding there's a big problem here and we need to put a lot more effort into figuring out how to crack that and solve that. But, it's tough for Kansas. Like, you look at the rest of this conference, and we talk about nine programs that have a chance to go bowling every year. Like, you got to be different, right? You got to do something a little bit different from everybody else. You've seen what that's done for Iowa State when they embraced, hey, we want to play great defense, we want to run the ball. That's what we want to build this all on, and they hired the right guy to do that. I just, from a style standpoint, I really want to see how different Les Miles wants to be from where they were at LSU, or if it's going to be kind of that same old style. And, certainly you can't get the studs at Kansas that you could get every year at LSU. So what's the long-term move there in terms of making Kansas a team that can steal, you know, 3 wins or 4 wins in Big 12 play and get to a bowl. I don't know, but it's going to be an adventure to watch and figure it out.
Yeah, and again, it could be very entertaining because of Les. If nothing sure. else, from our standpoint, regardless of how that ends at Kansas, there's a good chance, or how it goes at Kansas, I think there's a good chance it will be entertaining because Les can be a pretty entertaining guy. So I think we've hit everybody. Yes, we have. The good thing about the Big 12 is only 10 teams. With other conference previews, there have been points where it's like, oh, I forgot about Duke in the ACC. And, oh, yeah, I got to squeeze in Illinois in the Big 10. But luckily with the Big 12, only 10 teams, and we have gotten to all of them.
Let me ask you this, though. Can I ask you just one thing from the big picture standpoint here?
Yeah, sure.
If the Big 12 has strong enough parity that you feel like teams – oh, one through eight are all really good. Is that going to be? I sort of wonder if this is almost going to be like some of those Pac-12 years where they just beat up on each other a little bit too much, and the Big 12 champion has 2 losses and it costs them a playoff spot.
Yeah, and we're heading. You set yourself up perfectly because that's where I'm heading. Is that's going to be the next question? And this is what I would say. I feel like that's always been a possibility in the Big 12. Now, Oklahoma has consistently separated itself and kept itself above the chaff.
Yes.
And above the fray. One misstep here, but has always been able to recover from it. I do wonder if Oklahoma is in as good a position this year to recover from it. However, I also don't think the middle is as good this year because of all these transitioning programs. Like in the last couple of years, you had situations where Oklahoma was clearly the best, but 2 through 7 or 8, as you've said, or even almost 2 through 9 were right. dangerous teams where Kansas was a rollover and Oklahoma was pretty much a sure thing every week. But 2 through 9 were who knows what you're going to get from week to week. I think this year, once you get past 3 or 4 into that 6 or 7 range, you know, I think West Virginia is going to have a really tough year. I mean, they're losing a lot of players. They're just going to be down bodies at West Virginia. Kansas obviously is going to be Kansas. I imagine the transition for Klieman is going to be at least one difficult year. So I don't know if I feel like as much as Oklahoma may have slid back, I think the middle has moved back a little bit this year. So I guess long-winded way of saying I think you could get what you have, but I do think maybe Oklahoma is in a pretty good position to avoid having that upset by the number 5 team.
Yeah, I think that's fair, but you know, it's funny, like for how loaded Oklahoma was last year and to have the best quarterback in the country, the Heisman winner and all that. You go back and look and, you know, they beat Texas Tech by 5 and Alan Bowman was knocked out of the second half.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It came down to an extra point or 2-point conversion attempt against Oklahoma State. They won that game by 1. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they beat West Virginia by 3 points on the road. So they had a couple close games and you had, you know, the superior quarterback and you had kind of the edge in all those games. And, you know, they had a couple of those games that were a little bit tighter. In 17, you played Oklahoma State super close. You played Kansas State closer than you expected. You played Texas really close. A 7-point game with Iowa State. I'm fascinated to see is like the quarterback thing for them has always been the tiebreaker over everybody, and it's helped them survive the tight games you end up playing in the Big 12. And, you know, if one or two of those doesn't go their way, then it's a very different-looking league. But the same, I think, as we said, is totally true of Texas. Texas is a couple weird breaks from, you know, winning 7 games or 8 games last year. So it feels like it could be a volatile year in the league, and that certainly could cost you a playoff bid, I feel like.
Right, and as much as I say I will downgrade West Virginia, I'll downgrade Kansas State a little bit there. But, right, I mean, we began this talking about how, you know, when you count out TCU, that's a bad idea. And maybe this is a year TCU surges forward and Oklahoma State surges forward after a little bit of an off year. So I'll put you on the spot because the question was going to be who's going to play in the Big 12 title game, who's going to win it, and will that team make the playoff? And you sort of hinted that maybe where you're going with this, but I'll put you on the spot to make those predictions.
Oh, man. The hard thing for me, I guess this is true of every year of every team, is just like, if Iowa State or Texas has injuries at quarterback, I then I think they fall off kind of hard, right? So I feel like it's one of those two teams in the Big 12 title game. against Oklahoma. I'm not short in Oklahoma by any means. I think there's still the opportunity for them to win 10-plus games, 11, 12, you know, be in the playoff. If they're just a little bit better in a bunch of areas and the quarterback is not a big drop-off, then yeah, they can be in the playoff. But I think right now I still lean towards Oklahoma just based on them having that championship experience. And but boy, if it's a Texas-Oklahoma rematch in Dallas, Texas could find a way to win that. I think that we're all hoping for Texas and Oklahoma to play twice this season, just with how where they're both at. But boy, Iowa State could sneak up into this and be a team that neither Texas nor Oklahoma has any fun playing against.
Did I pin you down on that though? Did I get you? Will Oklahoma, if Oklahoma wins it, will they make the playoff? Will the Big 12 have a playoff team? How about that?
You know, I guess I'm sort of with everybody else and feeling like Alabama, Clemson, Georgia are in. I think I personally like can't make up my mind on if I feel like one of those Big Ten teams has a chance to be that fourth team or if it's Oklahoma or Texas. I'm going to say no for now, but okay. But certainly open to being wrong about that.
Okay, I twisted your arm on making that, but that's okay. It's predictions. Everybody will forget. Nobody will hold it against you.
I hope so. Those are my favorite kind.
There you go. Max Olson from The Athletic, you've done a yeoman's work again covering the country, but also covering the Big 12 here today on the Big 12 Preview Podcast. Thanks for the insight. Appreciate the time. And hopefully we will see each other at a press box real soon.
Hope so. Happy to join you anytime, Ralph. Thanks a lot, man.
And now three and out. First down. Preseason practice is in full swing, which is great news, except for one thing, injuries. Just in the last couple of days, Maryland, Oregon lost key contributors at wide receiver. Auburn receiver Anthony Schwartz is uncertain for the first game of the season against the Ducks because of a hand injury. Over in the Big 12, Oklahoma starting quarterback Trey Norwood could miss a big chunk of the season with a knee injury. The best news from your team at this time of year is no news at all. Second down, let's throw out some potential breakout players for the Big 12. You can start in Oklahoma, where the Sooners have to replace four starting offensive linemen, but nobody has been doing it better than Coach Bill Biedenbaugh in recent years, so expect players like Adrian Easley and Marquise Hayes to be the next all Big 12 performers on the offensive line for the Sooners. At Texas, cornerback Jalen Green will step into a secondary that lost several experienced players. As Max even said during his Texas look ahead, they've got a lot of inexperience in that secondary. Green is one of the guys they're expecting to take a big jump forward this year as a sophomore. Over at TCU, Okon Mathis could be the next great pass rusher for the Horned Frogs. Third down. So I'm not quite as high on Texas coming into this season as some others are. So I'm looking for another team to face Oklahoma in the Big 12 championship game. And I keep coming back around to Iowa State. I really like what Matt Campbell is doing there on the defensive side of the ball. They lose a couple of very big-time playmakers, but Brock Purdy, a quarterback, has a chance to make up for that, as well as playing behind a good offensive line. I'm also leaning toward the Big 12 winner not making the playoff. Who knows? Maybe Iowa State wins the Big 12 and sort of shocks the world this year. That's the show for today. I'd like to thank my producer, Warren Levinson, for making me sound good. You can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts and at Podcast One. Please subscribe so you do not miss an episode. I'm Ralph Russo, the college football writer with the Associated Press. Thanks for listening, and come back for more next week of the AP Top 25 College Football Podcast.